always stay in your homes. Stay in your homes.
Live from the Forbidden Book Group studio in Doppeltown, USA, it's Necronomicon with your host, Mike Stoppel and Mike Moncana, episode 90, Robert Jackson Bennett's Mr. Shivers, the story of a bunch of men chasing a man, and nobody loves him. And now, Necronomicon!
Military orders are subject to summary execution. Stay in your homes. Repeat, Comrade Channel. This is a Class 1 emergency. All civilian traffic is barred from streets and highways.
Well, how are you today on this the darkest night of the year?
Good. I'm actually a little technologically pissed off, I know. But I don't want to talk about it, so fuck Apple.
If you believe in astrology, Mercury is in retrograde and it's effing everything up.
Yes.
Everything has been an effort, and I blame it all on Obamacare.
Sure, why not?
I'm this close to becoming a Republican.
No, you're not. No. You're really, really not. Anyway, so you read a book.
We did.
Yeah. And you just finished this yesterday, did you not?
Actually, I finished it this morning.
Oh, good. So you remember what it's about?
Yes, kind of.
Yeah, it's all...
You know, it's all a blur.
It's all a blur to me now.
I read it in the middle of a... I woke up with insomnia at about 4 o'clock, mm-hmm. and so that's when I finished it, so...
Well done.
Yes.
In the bleak midwinter.
It's not even midwinter. Morning. It's winter. It's like the beginning of winter.
Yeah, it's like today.
In the bleak beginning of winter.
It's snow on snow on snow.
Yeah, I'm already tired of it, all of it.
Yeah.
Like, and the city's just given up on plowing.
Yeah, no.
It's only been like day one of winter and they've just stopped. Everybody's just done a collective, like, I'm sitting here and I'm not moving.
Yep, I know. I mean, I didn't shovel the walk. I'm not going to do it.
I have no ideas about anything. I have no gumption. I have nothing.
No pluck. No wherewithal.
Nothing.
All right, but we did finish the book.
Yes.
It's the hobo apocalypse.
It is the hobo apocalypse.
I enjoyed
that sub-genre. Yeah. Of horror.
It's yet another entry into the hobo apocalypse genre. I kind of enjoyed this book.
I kind of did until the end.
Really?
Yeah.
You didn't like that our hero went to the dark side?
Well, I enjoyed that part.
You did?
It's not that. It's just that it became more, it started unraveling.
Yeah.
Like, it seemed really tight to me.
Mm-hmm.
And then after... why don't you give a summary, just because,
sure.
Just to fill up time.
Yeah, just to fill up time, just to, you know, because, yeah. Mr. Shivers is a book about a man who quickly joins a group of other men in a Depression-era America. You first meet them riding the rails. They're in a boxcar.
It's like during the Dust Bowl.
Yeah, like during the Dust Bowl.
Yeah, migration.
Yeah, and they're heading west, and... our main character, Connolly, is chasing a man with a scarred face who you later learned is called Mr. Shivers or the Shiver Man, who eventually find out has killed his daughter. Although you don't find out exactly how or why or anything. It's just something.
Well, Mr. Shivers says why, but...
Because he could.
Just he said because so that she would die.
So that she would die, And so it starts off very concrete, a man chasing another man across the Dust Bowl Midwest and West. And he joins up with a bunch of other hobos, a preacher man named
Pike
and a northeastern Jewish man named Harrington.
Yes.
And a guy named Roosevelt. And eventually there's a woman in there.
Yes.
Named Lottie.
Lottie. But she leaves smartly.
She leaves. And
Peaches.
And Mr. Peaches. Well,
and his partner Herb.
He joins up with Mr. Peaches later. So it starts off very concrete. And eventually, as as you get on in the novel, things start taking on more and more mythic meaning.
Yes, exactly.
And it becomes heavily freighted with symbolism.
Yes.
And it just launches entirely into the symbolic by the end.
And that's where I feel we're like unraveled.
Yeah, yeah.
It definitely is like the hero, the anti-hero's journey.
Yeah. Although,
and it reminded me of Gunslinger a little bit.
Yeah, the man chasing the other man across a Western landscape is like the first line of the first Gunslinger book.
Right.
Also reminded me of sort of like Moby Dick on the Dust Bowl. You have this obsessed man who is, and once I made that connection, I'm like, uh-oh, things are not going to end up well for Connelly because he's Ahab. He is overly obsessed with this thing that took something that mattered to him.
Yeah.
And it's going to destroy him, and it does.
Yes.
But it didn't come to me right away. There was a scene about two-thirds of the way through the book when I thought, oh, shit, Connelly is damned.
What was that scene?
It was the scene where about two-thirds of the way through the book, Connelly is riding the rails with his friends, and they get waylaid by a bunch of railroad bulls. There is a huge fight, and they end up killing a couple of the thugs, but they all end up thrown in jail by this crazy
sheriff.
This crazy, like, you will respect my authority, and nobody can eat 50 eggs. Sheriff,
right?
Who is very polite and charming and utterly, utterly evil.
Yeah, and doing evil things in the basement.
Yeah, terrible things. And Connelly eventually escapes and gets the sheriff under his power and does terrible things to him.
That's exactly where I knew he crossed the line, right there.
He crossed the line.
He broke every one of his bones.
One of his bones, yep. But then didn't kill him. Just let him, like,
wiggle there.
Yeah, let him wiggle there in the wilderness. I thought, uh-oh, Connelly has gone over.
Well, and Mr. Shivas said to him,
uh-huh.
You're just like me.
Mm-hmm.
So whenever they say that, you know, it's probably true.
Yeah. And then I realized, yeah, then it's like, but I couldn't figure out for the longest time what Mr. Shivers was. Was he, he was a spirit of some kind of destruction, but it comes right down to it. He's just like a personification of death.
Well, which is weird because he meets up with the three...
the Weird Sisters.
Like the Weird Sisters or the
Fates.
Yeah, the Fates. Or yeah. What's it called in the Norse mythology? I want to say the nomads, but that's not what it is. They're the three Valkyrie? Whatever. It is. No,
not Valkyrie. I don't know.
There is a word for it, but
the three amigos,
three men and a little lady.
that'll be for a later podcast when we start reading shitty Chevy Chase movies as horror novels.
I'm already terrified.
I know.
What was my point? You just totally derailed me. I'm a hobo walking the rails looking for a train to come by.
I've tossed you off the train. You were talking about...
Has anybody seen my bindle?
You were talking about the personification of the three fates and...
all right, they say that he's death. They do say that he is death, but that you can't kill death. So why are they able to kill death?
Yeah, exactly.
Only because it's like death renews and becomes more deathy,
including death itself. So when they kill death, they just spawn a new death, and that's what Connelly becomes.
He becomes death.
Yeah, I mean, it's
he
all.
He becomes World War II, basically.
Yeah, he becomes World War II.
Yeah,
literally. Yeah, exactly. And it's a. You know, sometimes when books try when authors try to take on these big subjects like this, it works for me, and sometimes it doesn't. In this case, I'm going to say it worked for me.
Really? Tell me why.
Just because it did.
No, you have to back up your...
All right.
And you do that, I'm going to look up the Norse okay. Fates.
All right. It did because I was sort of plugged into some of the other books that I've read that sort of did this successfully, Moby Dick being one, of course. There's also hoping that you were going to mention this name, but it's very
Neil Gaiman,
very Campbellonian.
Well, I was thinking of the hero's journey, but this is not the This is not a classic hero's journey story at all. It's not.
It's a hero's. It's more of a hero's derailment.
Right. It's the.
See what I did there?
Yeah, that's funny. Yeah. because it's the fatal flaw, right?
It's the fatal flaw that he succumbs to.
Hubris,
and you want him, and you're with him because you at this point you want that sheriff to pay, and he does it, and then you're like, oh. I guess I didn't really think that one through myself either.
Yeah, because you don't want your heroes
to be
that flawed.
Yeah.
We like them semi-flawed, but we don't like them.
Yeah, exactly. And you don't. Yeah, and you don't want to see. There's
Well, it's like Death Wish, right?
Yeah. The movie.
Yeah.
Charles Bronson.
Yeah.
Haven't seen it.
Oh, I mean, his daughter gets killed, or his wife and daughter get killed, yes. And he goes just on a crazy ass spree.
Yeah.
And he gets taken over.
Yeah.
Like, he gets taken over by the Furies. Isn't that what the Furies do? I mean, literally in the movie, but isn't that what the Furies do? Like, they seek out vengeance matter what. And they're kind of, they're not evil, but they're bad.
They're bad, and the destruction left in their path is worse sometimes.
It's worse. The Norns, by the way. The Norns.
Well done. You just pulled that right out of your... Just reached up into your head and pulled it out of your
I knew that's what it was. No, I knew. I thought it was either the Norms or the Norns.
Like, hello,
but the Norms doesn't make any sense. All the Norms from Cheers. Three fat, bloated
guys.
Beer.
On their bar stools of vengeance.
Weaving the world with their bar napkins.
Anyway.
Yeah.
The other thing that this book reminded me of, and I think it was probably in the back of Robert Jackson Bennett's head, was that Coen Brothers movie, Oh Brother, Where Art Thou?
I was thinking of that. Yeah. I was absolutely thinking of that movie when I was...
And the comparison, you know, sometimes I think, oh, he's just ripping off Oh Brother, Where Art Thou? But this, the comparison is actually like helps this book grow in my... It helped this book grow in my head. Because I've sort of knew how to, because of the Coen Brothers movie, I was sort of like had a leg up on how to read the Depression and Dust Bowl landscape as a in a mythological way, and so when this author takes it up to the next level, I mean like a super mythological way, it really works, really worked for me, and it wasn't. I mean, and the story had a good velocity, lots of action. Lots of great characters. Although I have to admit, there was a lot of characters, and sometimes it was difficult to keep them straight.
I didn't care about any of the other characters.
Really?
Yeah. Maybe Peach is a little bit, just because I like the name. I disconnected from.
Really, they were all
the other characters. They all seemed like one big. Smudge of character. They were all red shirts to me. Because I kind of fell in the end. Oh, they're all going to go. Who's ever with them?
Yeah.
They're gone.
Exactly. And I wonder if that was a conscious decision on the author's part. Because we get to see the story. I mean, we're not in Connolly's head. Like, he's not narrating it to us. But we're like limited first person. I mean, limited omniscient narration.
Right.
We're outside of him. But we only get to see things from his point of view.
Right.
What he can see. That's his reaction. That's his attitude toward these other people. He is so driven, to seek vengeance because, the death of his daughter has really shut him down. It destroys his marriage. His wife leaves him. He hits on the road. He gives up his life and he says he wants to go back to it. But you know, even when he says that for the first time,
he's
like, are you kidding? You can't go back. You can't, nobody can ever go back from something like that. You can only go forward. And he goes forward to his perdition.
Yeah, being obsessed, you sort of lose some humanity.
So
and that's what you see in him as he starts to lose.
Yeah, and that one and the scene
and when the but part of it's the torture that happened to him in that cell by the sheriff.
Yeah,
well, it kind of starts earlier though on the train when he shoots the those guys on the train when he's in that fight.
Yeah, he's in the fight.
He's in the fight of his life on the train, and something to me that's where something started to click.
Mm-hmm.
Like, oh, he's going bad.
Yeah,
he's rotting a little bit.
Yeah. And in the end, you because you just assume that Mr. Shivers, the man that he's chasing, is pure evil. But when you realize at the end that what you've been watching is the whole story that you read is the birth of a new Mr. Shivers. This is how he gets made. How the principle of destruction and vengeance and
like Baby New Year.
It's like the Baby New Year.
That's what it reminded me of, was Baby New Year. The old year was old and dying and holding on to the sickle, and then Baby New Year's born, and old Mr. New Year's dead. And that's what happened, because Mr. Shivers is dwindling in his power.
Yes, that's what makes him vulnerable.
And he's even confused as to why he's, kind of losing his power, and why he knows Connolly's name,
and why, because he's
all men looked are the same to him.
Yeah,
and but not Connolly, and
because he realizes that Connolly is his death, is the death's death.
But it's interesting that the fate still when he goes to see the fate, it seems more hopeful. In a way, right?
Yeah, so it does. I mean, we're giving the impression here that this book is all just this one descent to doom. And there's lights,
make any sense that it's hopeful. Because in the end, there has to be another Mr. Shivers. I mean, basically, there's always death.
Yeah, but it doesn't have to be him.
Right.
The fates...
It couldn't have been Peaches either.
Yeah, the fates tell them that you can do this, and people tell him several times.
They kind of say, just stop now.
You can just stop.
Just stop.
He's like, I can't. You can. Lottie says, come with me.
Right.
That's
a really good point. All along the way, he can choose a path.
Yeah. Death will always be there, but it does not have to be you. You don't have to be the principle of destruction.
Yeah.
Speaking of that idol where he helps that family with their car, their cars. So they have this respite. Sort of, that's like the halfway point of the book. And he could have chosen another path. He could have had another family.
Yeah, a daughter.
Yeah, and another wife, and prospects out west that aren't about killing Mr. Shivers, but rather about being exploited,
like fixing things,
or
working at a grape farm.
Or, yeah, filling creosote tubs full of peaches, not Mr. Peaches, but actual peaches. And that would have that. Wouldn't have made it for a very interesting book.
No.
but what did make for an interesting book is to show him and you that alternate path that he could have taken. It was right there. He was on it. He could have just kept on it. And he doesn't.
And he doesn't.
Because of the darkness.
And the grief.
And the grief.
Mm. The grief that becomes obsession, that becomes revenge. It's about revenge. It's a book about what anger and revenge, rage.
Yeah, yeah. And it's all about because and his motivations and his way of rationalizing it to himself makes perfect sense. He goes, I have to set it right. You can't do that. I have to make it right.
And it's funny because all along the way, him setting it right means he hurts
people.
He hurts a lot of people.
Yes. He hurts a lot of
all
people.
All in service of his mission.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah, the evil we do because we're trying to do good. Right. That is, nobody does, well, not nobody, but very damn few people do things, evil things out of pure cussedness. Most of the evil that's done in the world,
has a good reason.
It's done for a good reason. It's done for your family. It's done for your country. It's done because it ain't right.
God wants you to.
It's done because God wants you to, because it's going to get you into heaven. That is where that's where evil comes from.
Yeah. That's the worst evil of all.
Yes. So this book was, I mean, that subject's been treated over and over and over and over again, and this is another treatment of it, and it's a pretty good one.
Yeah. It was, to me, it was up until the point where it just got so it just felt cliche to me towards the end. You know, oh, he's gonna meet Mr. Shivers, and he is Mr. Shivers, and he's gonna kill Mr. Shivers, and he'll become Mr. Shivers, and there's gonna be this weird fight, and
yeah,
Luke
right.
the Force, and my hand, and put me in this thing, and oh, I'm evil. And, I mean, it just that I kind of lost. I have to admit, I was reading really fast after that point. I'm like, oh.
Yeah, I know, and it was 4 in the morning.
And then it just become, and it becomes more, it became more abstract.
Yeah.
You know, because in the, up until that point, it's very specific, is all I can say. And then it becomes more abstract and loosey-goosey, and then you get this, kind of this epilogue that's almost a poem.
Yeah.
About, which is fine, but.
Which is about, you know, this new, the new Mr. Shivers and.
And the atom bomb and
the piles of bodies. And,
right.
Yeah, you're right. The book worked best when it was rooted to specific landscape and events and people. And when it left that plane and became abstract, it became less interesting.
It became preachy to me.
And preachy, right.
As they say in some circles, specificity is the height of narrative. So there, fart in the back of the classroom.
Fart. Anyway, it's funny. I mean, I enjoyed this book well enough. I wasn't really drawn into it in any profound way. I just sort of listened to it and enjoyed it, and then I was like, "Oh, that was nice. What's next?"
Yeah, that's
true.
And here's the other thing. If you think about it, we don't. The character of Mr. Shivers.
Uh-huh.
Oh, Mr. Shivers!
you do go off!
it is the 30s. you don't really get to see him much in action, frankly.
No.
You get to see the guys in action.
Yeah.
And the people that are sort of Shiverites.
Mm-hmm.
But really, not him. There's a couple scenes, there's a couple things. But even, like, the bloody gruesomeness is kind of kept to a minimum.
Yeah, it's...
And, you know, you hear about things that he's done.
Yeah.
But you don't really see it.
Yeah, I mean...
You know, and quite frankly, that whole sort of... there's a scene where a kid is describing him coming in while they're butchering a pig or a hog or something.
Butchering a hog, yeah.
And
it eats the heart.
Right? It eats the heart. And there's this cold sort of expertise that was a little chilling, frankly. And it's told third hand, kind of, or second hand in a way. So that's the most where you get like, oh, this guy is creepy. After that, he becomes sort of a pitiful figure.
He does. Yeah, I mean, two things. That scene about the description of the butchering of the hog, which is... commonplace. I mean, that happened every day.
Yeah, people butchered hogs.
You know, if you had a pork chop for dinner at any point in the last couple months, that
you butchered a hog.
A hog went through that. Through what is described in minute detail in this book, and that is the goriest part of the book. It was what happens to that.
It
hog.
Was the goriest part of the book. You're absolutely right.
Because the description was very particular about about the sounds it made and how they had they kept like covering the body.
And that's sort of my point. It was the most
And
it showed you the most about him, and you saw him sort of in action.
Yeah.
The rest is all like you see after effects, but you don't see really anything.
Yeah, but because the description the description of death, the minute machinery of death.
Right.
Is given in a scene where people are just putting some food on their table.
Right.
You understand it's the naked lunch. It's like, you know, this is where your food comes from. You can chase this man across the country because he did something awful to you, but you need this guy. Death is how you live just as much as how he lives.
Right. That's a good way of putting it.
The other thing is that, you know, you're saying that he becomes kind of pitiful. Well, I guess I don't have anything to say to that. But that the hog butchering scene I thought was kind of masterfully done.
Yeah, it was really... And I have to say, I don't think the rest of the book quite lived up to that scene.
Yeah.
To me.
Yeah.
Right? Even that weird, there's this weird dreamlike scene with this bull, right? And he's and bull. The gray man, he's also called the gray man, right? The
gray man, yes.
He's doing something with this bull.
Uh-huh.
And kills this bull, right? There's this scene.
Yes.
And that is, the here's to, I'm going to try to form a thought here. But those two scenes, if I stood them side by side to each other, the bull scene was more bullshitty to me than the hog scene, which seems so clear and crisp and pointed, and it did give me right?
And I was actually eating pork. I was having pork fried noodles for lunch as I was listening to that scene. I'm like, all right, well, I guess I'm going to go.
But here you have these two scenes where an animal is murdered, right? Is killed. And the one was chilling, and the other one was sort of like, oh.
That's funny.
And, you know, I've been to bullfights, and it kind of had that feeling.
Mm-hmm.
But it felt like, okay, now he's trying to be, I don't know if this is fair. Oh, now he's trying to be artsy. Is what it's
funny because my recollection, I remember the slaughtering, the pig slaughtering scene vividly, and I cannot call to mind the bull killing.
Isn't that interesting? And it is. It's a foggier, fuzzier, more dreamlike. It's a dream, more dreamlike scene.
That's probably why. Yeah.
But it's also to me, it's like where he was trying too hard to become more mythy.
Yeah. Yeah, you're right.
I'm just like, tell the damn story. That's mythy enough. You don't have to.
That's actually really smart.
Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Shivers.
Thank you for all your Mr. Shivers.
When books become like books can you can pull myth out of almost any book that you read.
Absolutely.
But the ones that are most effective are when it's not self conscious.
Oh, I'm going to be telling a myth now, people.
And like Moby Dick is that's one of the reasons that Moby Dick is so revered, I think, is that that book is chock full of specificity. But this is literally how and where you cut up a whale. And this is the part that you cut up and you throw it into a big pot and you turn that into oil.
Yeah.
All that kind of stuff. But in those scenes where like the try works is the chapter I'm talking about where they are getting the spermaceti and turning it into whale oil. That is a highly metaphorical scene about...
I never read the book, so I'm going to take your word for it.
But it's all... I mean, it has fucking diagrams in it. It's extremely specific.
Yeah.
But it works perfectly well, even better, on a metaphorical level. And if you didn't think about that... You wouldn't know it.
Yes, that's the point, right? Like, you don't have to become metaphorical to be metaphorical. Be specific, and you will be metaphorical.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah. That's what the reader's supposed to do.
Right. And if you're gonna... that's why the last quarter of the book felt more forced to me.
Mm-hmm.
And it was more dreamlike. It became more... It became fuzzier, and it became...
Yeah.
Like, the world... Because he goes to this mountain, right, and it's this cave, so it becomes more shadowy, and which I appreciated that, but it felt a little just like it felt forced.
It wasn't. I mean, we've read other books that sort of the whole book exists at that level, and you know,
Voyage to Arcturus.
What's that?
Voyage to Arcturus.
Oh yeah, we didn't like that book though.
No.
One of my
colleagues. Oh, no, I like that book.
Well, that's right. Did you?
Yeah.
That's not my recollection. Maybe I hated it enough for both of us. Mostly because I was really excited to read it after many years of reading about it, and it was a real big
flip. It was a slog, though. Okay, stick with me. Not like some of our other books. All right. We have officially meandered.
Okay. like wildly.
And the drink for cocktail time that we'll talk about later is getting to me.
Oh, yeah. Sorry about that.
I'm going to apologize in advance for anything I'm about to say.
Yes.
Motherfucker!
It's one long slur.
So
where were we? So we were talking about that books other than the one we were talking about.
Right, so we should get back to that.
Yes.
Right?
This book, I'm glad I read it, and I am in favor of it, and I would even recommend it to somebody. I would say this is a book worth reading. But
yeah, it's not going to stick with me, I got to tell you.
It hasn't left a mark.
Not like some of our other books.
No.
Not like Man on the Ceiling. And, I have a story about revenge, but I'm not going to tell it. But I will say this. When somebody does something to you, and it does take over you, you aren't in charge anymore. Something does become in charge of you.
Yeah.
And you have to be careful because the obsession about it and...
Yeah, the obsession about trying to find that
of
thing.
Of getting justice.
Getting justice, of preventing...
Of righting a wrong.
Of preventing it from happening again. It can take over your life.
Yes.
It can take over the air traffic control system.
It can. And it creates its own... It creates... it's like the snake eating its tail because it starts to devour you. And
do you know what you just did there?
No.
The snake eating his tail is the tattoo in the book.
You're right. I didn't know that, but
yeah,
now I know it.
Now I finally figured it out.
What?
That's why it was. I mean, I knew it was there for a reason. You know, put the Ouroboros in there for no reason, but that's why. You just accidentally summed up the book.
I'm so smart by accident.
You it's, really
remember
really
our other are. Podcast that was going to be called It's the Beer Talking?
Yeah. It's the beer talking. Anyway, so speaking of this talking beer,
yeah, we better get to
that
it.
We're not drinking; we're drinking something else. So let's tell the people.
I think it was the booze. It's the booze.
It's
talking.
It's the booze talking. Yeah. Yeah. So let's talk about the booze.
All right, it's cocktail time, I guess.
So
here we are.
What are we drinking?
We are drinking something nasty.
Nasty.
It's like cooked out like in a pot with old. Shoe heels and tin cans and
corn husks and
squirrels, dried squirreled
and snouts. And snouts. Various snouts.
And old kerchiefs. Old like bandanas dipped in
sweaty bandanas.
Sweat of old hobos.
Sweat and creosote. So what we're drinking here is actually not anything like that. It's actually quite good.
Yeah, I like
it. But it doesn't sneak up on you so much as rain death from above. What we're drinking here is called the Bindle Stiff. And so we were inspired by various hobo libations.
If we only had like a toilet to fill up with like apple shavings and oh no, wait, that's prison. That's not hobo.
Yeah.
But it's close.
It's already
the cousin to hobo booze.
And we already made a Pruno. remember highfalutin Pruno?
Yes.
Anyway. I wouldn't recommend you actually make that. We really don't. But make this.
We've made a lot of errors in our booze yes. concoctions.
Horrible errors. But this one, the Bindle Stiff, you get yourself some Applejack, apple brandy. If you want to be highfalutin about it, you can go get some Calvados. But apple brandy.
Yeah, Calvados, yeah.
Yeah. If you're a European hobo. but Applejack will do
Hoo-boo.
Just fine.
Hoo-boo.
Le hobo. Let's get some Applejack. Take two shots of that. You know, this is in a shaker. Two shots of that. A shot of Madeira wine. You can get goods.
Did we really put a whole shot in there?
Oh, yeah.
All right.
You can get some good high-quality stuff, or if you want to go full hobo, just
get
some...
high-quality, because bad Madeira is bad Madeira.
Bad. Yeah, if you're going to get bad
it's
Madeira,
like drinking,
put in a half a shot.
It's like drinking, like...
Yeah, well, yeah.
Corn syrup.
It's for cooking.
Booze.
So, good Madeira. And then some aromatic bitters of your choice. Angostura is fine, but there's a lot of new bitters out there. So, have some fun. Get something that you...
And a half a shot of black and dark rum.
And a half a shot of dark rum. Shake that all up with ice and strain it into a glass.
Now, here's the garnish. You can either do a couple of baked beans on a toothpick,
a
piece of beef jerky, mm-hmm. Not the sausage kind, like the actual like thin.
Yeah, if you want to go
like,
full on
chewy.
Hobo, if you want to go full on hobo, don't strain it into a glass. Strain it into a tin can.
Yeah, that's like not all the way up. Yeah, like most, the lid's not all the way off, so you can cut your teeth out.
Yeah, and it's mostly clean, but not totally clean.
So get a tetanus shot.
Super good idea.
That's the drink.
There you go.
That's good.
Stiff. Super tasty and effective.
Well, let's go down to the basement, shall we?
Let's go down there. So whenever we pick a book, the first thing you say is, no more zombies.
Wait, we haven't gone down to the basement yet. Now we're in the basement.
So whenever we pick a book, the first thing you say is, no more zombies. But I think I found a book here that will sort of sneak under that prohibition.
All right, tell me about it.
Well, this one is kind of a fantasy novel.
Hmm.
It takes place in the late medieval times. It's about a resurrected Knight Templar.
I'm totally down for that.
Yeah,
it's called, that's like old school zombies, then, right?
Yeah, exactly. I think it looks good. It's got a great book cover, and you know. Book covers.
I judge
this book by its cover, and it's got a great one. Right. So it's called Toothless by J.P. Moore. Toothless is the name of the guy.
Has he written anything that you know of, J.P. Moore?
I don't know. I mean, I saw the book cover, and I was like, this is for me.
All right, let's do it.
Toothless, J.P. Moore. All right, let's get out of here.
All right.
Well then,
it's the holiday season, so whoopsie doo and dickity dock. says dead Andy Williams. Wait, is he dead? Zombie Andy Williams.
Says zombie Andy Williams. Yes, he's. I think he's passed. Oh, poor Andy Williams.
He was a sharp dresser.
He was.
He was.
He was.
Is there anything more about this
book?
Dang book.
Oh, Mr. Shivers. Oh, Mr. Shivers. Not really. I recommend this to people, but you know, I'm not going to shout it from the street corner.
I kind of hope, in my heart of hearts, that there is more hobo apocalypse horror that will come out of this. You know, perhaps our humble podcast will inspire somebody to write some more hobo horror.
Hobo horror.
I mean, I can kind of see hobos like vampire slaying.
Uh-huh.
Like using their bindle sticks to.
Oh yeah.
Yeah, nice, and nice. I could see hobos taking on zombies.
Uh-huh,
and
uh-huh. I mean, there's a book that came out within the last year or so about it's another horror novel set in the American South, but it was during the 20s, I think, 20s and 30s, and instead of hobo culture, it was all about blues culture.
Hmm.
So it was about like I haven't read this. I think it's by last name is Moore. I'm not gonna be able to call it to my mind here, but it's, you know, it's about the devil at the crossroads sort of thing.
Yeah.
It's looked interesting. Maybe we'll put that. Maybe that'll be episode 92.
I'm gonna say this, and this author, I'm gonna apologize in advance, but I think what he was trying to do is what Neil Gaiman did better.
Oh snap!
And because he took a moment in history,
mm-hmm.
time, whatever. And was able to richly mythologize it.
Yes.
And I think this guy did okay.
Yeah.
But I think it stretched it at the end for me.
Yeah. Will you read
another? That's my opinion.
Will you read another book by this guy?
I definitely would.
I would too. I guess that's about as high of a recommendation as you can give, I think.
I think so too.
I suppose you could say, I want to be buried with this book.
You want to be buried,
but not anytime soon. That would be the highest.
You raise an interesting premise here. What book would you be buried with?
What book would I be buried with?
Yeah.
Ooh, gosh. What book would I be buried with? I want to be buried with.
I'm thinking right now too.
Most of the Western Hemisphere would say the Bible.
Ugh. Pandering to your God.
But I would say, gosh, I would say I want to be buried with, oh, it's so hard, you know?
It's really hard.
I want to be buried with my iPad and all books.
No, you have to pick a, no, that's not the premise of the question. The book.
I want to be buried with Shakespeare, the tragedies.
That's not, okay, I guess I'll give you that.
Or I would like to be buried with Dante's Divine Comedy.
Why?
I don't know. I think they'd molder nicely. I don't know.
Interesting.
I was trying to think of something that's kind of churchy, but not actually the Bible, but something that actually like I've read a bunch of times and really,
means something. That's the thing. What's the book that you've read more than once? And I'm embarrassed to say it.
Harry Potter.
Yes!
All of them. Which one?
Phil Pullman.
And the Philip Pullman books.
Yeah, I've read more than once.
Wow. I've only been through all
I'm
those.
I'm so ashamed.
Time. You shouldn't be ashamed. I work with people.
So ashamed.
You know, I work in publishing, and I work with people in publishing who are way smarter than me who have read the Harry Potter series 3-4 times.
Yeah, I don't. So, I mean, I guess that would be the book I'd have to be buried with.
Yeah. I would say, years ago, like 15 years, 20 years ago, I would say Ulysses by James Joyce.
Hmm.
But I don't think I like that book anymore. I think I'm kind of done with him.
Yeah. So, you know, I probably
House of Leaves. I want to be buried. No, I don't.
Are you kidding?
I really, really don't want to be buried. House of Leaves.
We have to end our friendship at that point.
That's us.
That's a really good.
We're making fart noises in the background.
It really makes me. It has me really thinking. Like, what else, other than the Harry Potter, the whole series or the Philip Pullman series?
Yeah, yeah.
Because those were complete worlds to me.
Yeah. Oh,
I mean, I got lost in those worlds. I'm trying to think of what else was like that for me. Possibly those books from Russia, the Day Watch and Night Watch. That was a very complete world.
The Sergei Lukyanenko.
But I don't think I would. I don't think it touched me that the same way. No.
I wasn't compelled to.
Catcher in the Rye. Dracula. Brave New World.
Dracula,
all those were life changing books for me.
Yeah.
Vampire Hunter D. Stranger in a Strange Land, another life-changing book for me, which I've mentioned before in this podcast. So
yeah, that was Dune was a life-changing book for me.
Would you reread it?
I have reread it, and it was as good as I remember it being at first, but then everything else that I read by that author has been a disappointment.
How about any of the books that we've read
For the cast.
Is there any that you would say,
There's one and only one.
What is it?
The Man on the Ceiling.
Yeah, I think so too.
Yeah.
I was going to say that.
We're gonna be here at the end of episode 100, and that is going to be the best book. And that having read
should
that
we
book.
Should we reread it?
Maybe we should. Yeah. Having read that book will be like, will have made the entire podcast worth it. That right there is a high recommendation.
Oh my God, Mike.
It may be the outer darkness.
You might be damning yourself by the time we come around to it.
I know. Maybe we should.
It's like a love affair that you can't go back because it's never the same.
Yeah,
it's just,
exactly.
It's trying to. It's like that Woody Allen and Annie Hall, where he tries to like recreate the lobster moment, and it's just
yes,
right.
Lobster.
Exactly. Exactly.
That was really sad.
It's really sad. You can't go back to those things.
Nope. You can't. So maybe I shouldn't reread it.
Maybe some books should not be reread. But boy, I'll tell you, I've reread the Harry Potter, the last book, and it still gives. It still gives.
So we have settled in our next book, but I want to put out there for future books that we should read a book by Stephen Rasnick Tem, and we should read a book by Melanie Tem. Like,
all right, we should
separate
read
authors.
That's a good idea.
We'll put those in the last.
That's
10,
a good idea
because I think as we're winding things down here, we should give our.
Are we really going to wind it down?
We won't know until episode 101 comes around.
It could be a surprise. Maybe we'll reboot it.
Yeah, we'll reboot it.
Necronomipod 2.0.
Yeah, we'll just go back and reread all the books that we read.
No, please, God, no.
Starting with the fucking mosquito book.
We should do our top 10 and our top worst and our top best.
We absolutely will do that.
All right, dude.
We absolutely will do
and
that.
We'll do clips. We'll do a little clip episode like Seinfeld did for his 100th episode.
Shit, the clip show. Yeah, we'll definitely do the clip show.
All right. So
we're just dancing around the.
Goodbye then.
All right.
Oh wait, we should. What should we do?
I think
what we should do is like shove it on an old rail car.
Yep.
And that's it. Just watch it go off into the distance.
Yep, and then walk away from the dust.
That's exactly right.
All
right,
done.
How pretty ass girl in all the world is in a little Spanish town. But I left a fall upon a lass, and I told her I'd see her around. But that boy. Lost all your dreams. There's nothing like a campfire.